Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time for the Pedego Podcast. As we chronicle the e-bike revolution and the entrepreneurs driving it, along with the love stories of those just riding along. Brought to you by Pedego Electric Bikes. Well, today, we got a love story that you're going to love because this guy didn't just decide he wanted to get back on a bike. He wanted to get healthy. He wanted to see the world. He wanted to do 1,000 things, and the e-bike seems to be the vehicle of choice for doing it. Welcome to our show out of Colorado. We have Perry Hubert. Did I say your name right?
Paul, that is correct.
Okay. So let me see if I got, they sent me some little background. Let's see if we've got, there's so much in here we could take the whole show just talking about your background here. You're originally from Wisconsin. You got a bunch of rental properties in Colorado. You're sort of semi-retired, as you describe yourself. You're 68. And you decided somewhere along the way, I am going to get healthy in this next act in my life. What did that look like? What did you need to do to get healthy? And then why an e-bike?
I've actually, over the years in my life, have been able to lose a lot of weight and then gain it back. And what,
like
I,
all of us.
What I did this time around is I had set the original goal to lose 80 pounds over the course of a year. And as I was approaching that, then I increased that goal to 90 pounds and I increased it again. Ultimately, in the course of a year, I lost 100 pounds. And so at the end, I just really pushed it real, real hard to pick up the additional five, loosen that so that I could say I lost 100 pounds. But basically, I live at 90 pounds down from where I once was. At one time, I weighed 270.4.
Wow.
I now weigh between 178 and 181 consistently. So my body seems to like that weight. And I'm actually much leaner than when I first lost the weight, just from the standpoint of the constant exercise. So I've got, my legs are pretty muscular. I have to wear slim and athletic jeans so they don't bag on me. But I'm actually, from that standpoint, I'm in better shape than I was when I was a senior in high school.
So why suddenly decide to improve your life in your mid to late 60s? That's when we start fattening up. That's when we start hibernating. That's when we start giving up.
Well, you know, we work so hard over the course of our life. It just seems that we should really take the time to enjoy it and have lots of years left to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I realized that it was time to, this time, lose all the weight and keep it off. So as I was approaching my goal this time around, rather than thinking at the end, ta-da, I made it.
Yeah.
My thought process was, okay, this is one step in the process. The additional step is continuing and to continue on a healthy path. And I found my wife actually has an interceptor, a Pedego interceptor that she's had for a couple years more than I've had my city commuter. So I rode her bike a few times and loved it, you know, just loved her bike because I had been riding previously Trek 7500.
Right.
So I rode her, you know, basically when we bought her bike at the time, she couldn't keep up with me.
Huh.
Once she got that bike, I couldn't keep up with her.
Yeah.
So ultimately I did some bike shopping. I tried other models, but I couldn't duplicate the quality of a Pedego. So I ended up trying three different Pedegos and selecting a black city commuter, which I've now had for 31 months.
Wow.
So my bike year, if you will, runs from May 17th of one year to May 16th of the following year. And initially in the actual goal setting for bike riding, my original goal when I bought the bike was to average 75 miles a week.
Right.
Well, after just about 3 weeks, I was way, way over that. And so I just continued to pile up miles. And I always would log on my computer at the end of the day the number of miles I had ridden, the number of minutes I'd exercised,
right,
both on a Pedego and swimming laps. I'd swim a lot of laps and do aqua aerobics. So I would keep track of exercise minutes. So my joke is I'd collect minutes. And
well, you put me to shame, buddy, because I'm a man of a certain age and I don't do any of that stuff here. All right. So let's break this apart a little bit here. All right. At some point you woke up and said, I'm getting ready to retire, semi-retire. I got some income. I got some rental properties, but I'm not going to enjoy this if I'm overweight and unhealthy And why did I work all these years if I can't enjoy it right now? So you decided to do this. Now, the two questions I have, everybody's got to ask, why an e-bike? E-bike is cheating. You're not riding, you know.
You know, it's really interesting. Every once in a while, I do, when I'm riding, someone will ride by and say, that's cheating.
Right.
I said, and I'll say, I've dropped more than 90 pounds. I don't care.
I'll cheat all day.
So I don't consider it cheating. Just from the standpoint, having an e-bike changes how you think.
Yes.
Like if you're driving in a car and you're going somewhere, what's the quickest way to get there? If you're riding an e-bike, the thought process is, what's the most interesting way to get there?
There you go.
And, having an e-bike, even if you're dog tired at the end of the day, you get on the bike and you go, well, I'll just go out for 10 miles. Well, then suddenly it's 25 miles and you come home and you feel invigorated and refreshed. And the reality is the e-bike can replace the car in so many ways.
Yeah, like we hear that all the time.
I visit my tenants with the e-bike sometimes. I go to the bank. I go to the grocery store. I go to the hardware store to pick up stuff to fix the sprinklers. So more often than not, if I've got a chore to do, I think, I get to have a wonderful bike ride as part of the chore. So it encourages me to ride.
So let's talk about that, because we've had other people say this, and I guess I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. If I've got an e-bike, I can certainly go farther. If I've got an e-bike, I can certainly overcome the obstacles that in my head saying, I can't ride. It's too far. There's a hill in between. I'm going to get tired. I better just go around the block and quit. So it does overcome some of those obstacles and takes you further. But you're saying it's actually an enjoyable way to do chores and errands because you're out. You're not in a car. You're in the environment.
Yeah, it's much more interesting to be in the environment. I mean, I really like the visceral feeling of the coldness and the heat and the winds. Those visceral feelings are really an enjoyable thing to experience virtually every day. So I really enjoy that. And it's just, it's fun to be active, going somewhere and doing something. And, someone will ask me a question about the bike and we'll have a little conversation.
Yeah, right.
I was riding up in Fort Collins earlier this year, and there's a little area on the trail called Rattlesnake Alley. And I wasn't sure if that was a joke or not. And I ended up talking to a guy before I entered Rattlesnake Alley.
Yeah.
And we had a long talk. And sure enough, that is a Rattlesnake Alley. And as I continued to ride, every once in a while, you'd see a sign about the rattlesnakes. So I was very mindful of the rattlesnakes.
Nothing holds Perry back here. Rattlesnakes, wind and snow. So the other obvious question is, I wouldn't think of an e-bike as an exercise bike. I think of it as a way to get on a bike and get out again. But you're saying because you can pedal it, it just takes away, you end up going farther, you end up going more often, and you ended up losing weight even with an e-bike. But what strikes me is you're in Colorado. You can't ride the e-bike 9 months out of the year.
Oh, you can ride the e-bike 12 months a year.
Really?
And I have what I call polar bear rides.
Yeah, tell me about that.
A polar bear ride is, I'm comfortable riding if it's like 34 degrees and sunny. If I'm dressed warm enough, I'm comfortable riding. Now, the first thing to go, of course, are your toes and your fingers.
Yeah.
So I do have like battery-powered gloves that you can charge up the battery and try to keep your fingers as warm as possible.
Okay.
And I do wear a heavier shoe with two pairs of socks.
Yeah.
And I'll wear three layers on the bottom, like two long Under Armours with bike shorts and like five layers of clothes on top, and just try to stay as warm as possible. And like I say, you can get down to 34 with the sunshine and you're okay, but you do have to be mindful of ice and slush.
And do you actually ride through ice and slush or rain and snow? Are you the post office? Nothing holds you back?
I do. I have ridden in a lot of difficult weather along the way. I'll give you two storm stories.
Okay,
one,
I
was out riding. This one was maybe 6 months ago, and I was riding, and I was east of where I live. And of course, I live very close to the foothills, so weather can be very changing in Colorado.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you get on the bike and you go, I better ride south or I better ride north, just looking at the sky.
Right.
So I'm riding actually on a parallel line east of home and east of the mountains, and I can see the storm is there. And so I ride south as far as I possibly can before I break west for home. And so then I break west for home, and I get within 3/4 of a mile of house, and the rains just come cascading down.
Yeah.
And of course, I get thoroughly soaked in that last 3/4 of a mile. But, you know, just step into the laundry area, throw all the clothes in the dryer, and away we go.
And away we go. So you can even outrun the storm. You know, on a regular bike, you can only pedal so fast. But if you need to, this is that emergency power there to, I got to get moving because the storm's coming up quick here.
Yeah, I actually very rarely use the throttle. Like, I'll use it on that first start step, you know, just, you know, I'll feather and start.
Right.
And if I make an extremely slow turn and I don't want a downshift, then I'll use it on that extremely slow turn. But I tend to ride fast all the time. So I'm generally riding 20. It's basically set at 20, but it seems to be 20.1. So I pretty much cadence pedal at 20.1 just about everywhere. Plus, you know, when you say an e-bike doesn't give you good exercise, you can actually set how much the e-bike helps you.
Exactly.
You know, so I can make it a harder ride. And also, you know, if you ride long enough and your battery charge goes all the way down, I mean, I've pedaled the thing as a brick 6.5 miles home one time. So,
that's an amazing thing. When my a friend had a Tesla, when it failed, the battery went out, it was a brick. There was no getting home. But this is still a bike. You can still pedal it.
Yes, you can still get home. I mean, I had a great experience 2 months ago. And I was actually near Louisville, Colorado, and basically there's a High Point road that drops into Boulder, into the really beautiful Boulder Valley.
Yeah.
I'm out there, and there's a huge thunderclap about 0.5 mile to my south, to the south of where I am. And I continue on, and about 30 seconds later, the thunderclap is the loudest thing you've ever heard right directly over my head.
Oh, man.
And I was zipping down the hill, and the rains came cascading down, and then I broke north to head home, and I could see the sun shining. I was going to ride out of the weather, and I ultimately rode out of the weather, and the entire front of my body was soaked head to toe. My shoulders were soaked, but the back of my body was totally dry.
How about that? So what do you see when you're out there? You know, we had people say they ride these through national parks, and it's a whole different experience, because mm-hmm. it's normally when I go through a national park, Yellowstone, or here in California, you know, we go through one of the big parks here. I don't get out of the car. It's a drive-through experience. It's jungle land safari. I get in my car. I drive through. I look through the windshields. Hey, look at that. Look at that. Maybe I put down the window if it's nice. But I'm observing it from behind a steering wheel. You're observing it, the wind in your face. Do you see more? Do you see other things than if you're stuck in a car?
You see a tremendous amount. You know, obviously, if you ride, you know, better than 29,000 miles, you're going to see a lot of things. So, like, I saw a bear a few months ago. That was really fun. Just earlier this year, I was actually riding up in Boulder, and you can actually ride up into the foothills, into the mountains on a concrete trail. And I was riding up there, and it came around a very sharp left-hand turn, and here's a rattlesnake spread out horizontally across the concrete trail. And I was too close to him to stop, so I just aimed for a spot about 5 inches behind his head, and I raised my feet off the pedals as I ran over. And then I ran up the trail about another 0.4 mile. I came back, and he was gone.
Yeah.
So we both survived the encounter.
Both survived. All right, and now you're at the base of the biggest mountains in the continental United States here. You're at the base of the Rocky Mountains. Surely you don't go beyond the foothills up into the 15,000 square foot Rocky Mountains, do you?
I don't ride like up to 15,000 feet, though we used to have a cabin up just outside Estes Park.
Right.
And occasionally I would take the bike up there and I would ride in Rocky Mountain National Park. So you are riding at some altitude. But you have to be very careful because the roads are kind of narrow and it's a little dangerous in terms of cars. So,
but you can if you want. You can if you, I mean, you literally can go. Oh, yes. This bike will take you up there.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I actually was looking at buying an e-bike, I took one up there with me to see how it would perform at higher altitude.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm wondering.
Because the cabin when we had it was at 8,100 feet.
Wow.
So we would ride, you know, I would ride around up there to see how the bike performed at altitude, and they performed fine at altitude. So,
What did you do for a living when you have rental houses, but you were like in mediation or something here, bringing people together? Does this bring people together? Is this a mediator's tool? Let's go out and ride a bike together.
It actually should be. Yeah, I've had a mediation practice called Affirm, like Affirm as an agreement, Affirm mediation.
Right.
And I've done that for probably 24 years. And so in my practice, I worked with divorcing couples. I also worked with real estate transactions gone bad. And internally, I would go inside companies and work with key stakeholders and companies to try to resolve conflict. Mm-hmm. So those kind of skills aren't particularly about e-biking, but I think it's, maybe indirectly, because it's very creative thinking. And I think, changing one's life and really looking to improve one's life requires a certain amount of creativity.
Right.
And making every ride interesting sometimes requires creativity when you're tired. But I just get inspired by it. Honestly, my favorite movie is Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And at one point, Tim Robbins says, get busy living or get busy dying.
Yeah.
And I really believe in getting busy living.
So I've always wondered, you're just bringing up a thought. We've never had anybody say this, so maybe I'm crazy here. But it seems like it could be a team building kind of exercise. If you get people who aren't getting along, want to get along better, want to communicate, because I hear this a lot. It's the great equalizer. William Shatner was on one of our shows, 90 years old, and he and his family and grandkids ride a bike. And he said, for me, otherwise I'd never keep up the grandkids. They're racing ahead. It's the great equalizer. Your wife was pulling ahead of you. Everybody can go out and experience this from kids to seniors. And I'm wondering if that, and it seems to be a social activity more than when I rode a bike. I've said many times in the show, I did it by myself. I did it as exercise. I got up, forced myself to go out and came back, and then I did. I know there are people that ride bikes as groups, but I didn't. I'm wondering if this is more of a social thing and maybe an equalizer thing that, I don't know, could it be a team building thing for a company? Should a company buy half a dozen e-bikes and get them all out on the road?
Oh, it absolutely could be a team building thing. And you're right about it being the great equalizer. People with a variety of health conditions or, an age disparity between people, you're right. It is the great equalizer. It is an opportunity to get out. And I think it'd be tremendous for that. Had e-bikes been around years ago when I've done some of my internal corporate stuff, absolutely, I would have used it for that.
I think there's a new thing here. Nobody's ever talked about it. I don't know if anybody's doing this, but, we take companies out on hikes and trails, and you all bond together because you got to make a fire and you got to survive and go out and do these things. It would seem like if you took them out together and experienced something together, you would end up with a together group of people.
Oh, I think that would be tremendous. Many years ago, I went on a corporate retreat, basically, which was a canoe trip. And we camped overnight on the canoe trip. I mean, this would be very similar. This idea of the e-bikes and riding together, would be a similar idea and easier, logistically easier to do.
Right. Exactly. You don't have to go somewhere and pay an outfitter. You could just take the bikes and go out into somewhere and do it. All right. Last question. I guess you're not just confined to Colorado. You tell me you've been to how many countries around the world? Are you ever going to take one out there?
Yes. I've been to 26 countries. I used to, years ago, fly a lot for work, and it was in the heyday of frequent flyer miles. Like, right. I would fly down to Texas and Louisiana for work, and I would pile up all these miles that then became international trips.
Right.
So one of the greatest ones was going to Russia. I had I did an executive MBA program at DU, and as part of that program, basically my employer gave me up every other Friday for a year and a half, and I gave up every other Saturday of my life, the opposite weekend, for a year and a half also.
And DU being what, Denver University, is that?
Denver University. So I got my MBA through Denver University in the executive program, and then we, as part of that, we went to Moscow. So we got to spend a week in Moscow, and we were able to meet with government officials, and it was an incredible experience. This was actually a year before the attempted coup.
back in the Russia. 90s or something. Yeah, right. Boris
right.
Yeltsin
so,
and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. So back at that time, you would see military people all over the place, but you never saw a firearm ever. You know, so it was kind of like, it's kind of like, we know change is coming. We just want it to be relatively peaceful.
Yeah.
You know, so there was never a firearm visible to provoke anything with anyone. And it was funny. I would just get up very early in the morning. I'd go walking by myself all over Moscow. And one morning I walked down by the river, and down by the river, there were about 3,000 people down there, and they had all kinds of pamphlets and books and things. It was all the things the government wouldn't want you to read.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I remember those days. It was exciting. The Berlin Wall came down, Russia overnight turned into something else. I think a lot of that promise was lost, unfortunately, as the oligarchs came in and turned it into a giant criminal enterprise. Maybe that's an overstatement, but... But as he took the public industries and turned them private and all became billionaires.
I have to tell you something really interesting about that. When you talk about organized crime. So when I was there, there were three exchange rates. There was the gold rate, or the official rate of exchange of currency.
Right.
There was the hotel rate, which was brutal. And then there was the taxi driver rate, and the taxi driver rate was the best rate, where you could exchange dollars for rubles.
Right.
And I often think that those taxi drivers who became the original entrepreneurs, because they were used to that kind of life. And so as things changed and opened up, they were already in a great position. I'm sure many of them became quite wealthy.
So we're talking about e-bikes as exercise. We're talking about e-bikes as the great equalizer and getting out on the road and getting over the obstacles. Just do it. And we're talking about e-bikes. I like this team building idea. I think somebody should pick this up. Maybe it's you and me. We'll start some team building.
There you go.
And I also, could it be like, let's all just ride to, is it the Rodney King version? Can't we all just get along? Should we ride for peace? If we got politicians on bikes together, would it be a more peaceful planet?
You know, that's an interesting thought. I actually was reading an article a little while ago about Los Angeles, where a lot of people of incredibly diverse backgrounds will go out bike riding together. And I think that's a tremendous idea. And e-biking, once again, as you say, would certainly be a great equalizer, because not only would you have diverse people riding together, but you'd have diverse age groups of people.
Yes.
Yeah, as well as ethnic groups.
And I got grandkids. I don't do too many things with, I mean, I take them someplace, but we don't have too many activities we can do together. You know, they can play basketball. I can't much anymore. Because I'm like you in my mid-60s here, and life is slowed down, and the bones hurt a little bit more. But an e-bike, they can get on a bike, and I can get on a bike, and we're all equal. We're all enjoying something together. Well, I like that. So I think we're good. We got a mediation company, and we got a Bikes for Peace movement. There you go.
Sounds good.
The world. All right, any last thoughts? You really are into this. I really appreciate you sharing this. Did you know it was going to be this much fun? Did you know you were going to get this hooked on it?
I didn't originally, but it didn't take long. Let's put it that way. When I bought the bike, I had looked at the Pedego website and I saw William Schachner, and there was also an older gentleman, and he said, "I've ridden my Pedego 40,000 miles and I'm going to do another 40,000 miles. And I was actually getting acupuncture, and I was thinking about him. I had ridden for quite a while at that point, and I got to thinking about it and said, "Well, how long would it take me to ride 40,000 miles?"
Yeah,
and
right.
I thought at the time, well, easily I'm going to hit 8,000 miles this year. And I said, well, okay, then 40,000 in 5 years, I could do 40. And I said, well, so his 80 would take me, 8 years. And I thought, or rather, five years on the first one and 10 on the 80. And
don't confuse me with math here. Yeah, it's a multiple years, right?
Yeah, so 12 and a half years would give you 100,000 miles. And then actually, I could see that I was heading up toward 9,000. And then when COVID hit, it killed my swimming.
Yeah,
and I said, if I really, really push it and the weather cooperates, I can make 10,000. And once I did that, I just kept rolling, into real high numbers after that. I said, I'm changing this to, 10,000 miles a year at a minimum of 10 years for 100,000. And then we'll play it year by year after that, but we'll try to keep doing 10,000 every year after that.
Would you come back when you hit 100,000? Because that's a milestone. We'd love to celebrate with you here. I think you're going to get
absolutely.
There faster. Absolutely. All right. Thanks much. You are the face of the e-bike revolution. People say, what is so exciting? Listen to this show. Look at how excited you are and look at what it did for you. Health benefits, happiness benefits, fun benefits, and get you out more often, even in Colorado in the snow and the slush. Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us on this week's edition of the Pedago podcast as we chronicle the e-bike revolution and the love stories like Perry of those pushing it farther than we ever thought possible. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net. Streaming live from the University of California Irvine's Beal Applied Innovation Center.